Good afternoon. Welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast. This is episode 8. Today is a really special episode of the Warrior Soul Podcast because I've never actually had guests on this show before. And I searched and I searched for people to like me and finally found two guys named Jeff and Randy. And they're from the Alpha Cast, which is another veteran-run podcast. And I'm going to introduce them in a second. But first, I want to get into today's subject matter. And a couple of months ago, I put out a survey to the veteran community. My main point in doing this survey was to try to find some of the common struggles that we see. And so the question was, what is your greatest struggle? What are you currently struggling with the most? And so I'm going to read you a few of those answers, and then we're going to get into today's subject matter. First one is this. One of my biggest struggles is keeping a job. I do well in advance, learn and build character amongst my counterparts, then my higher staff superiors. Yet with this outcome, I've noticed that I am the first to be laid off or dismissed to being a kid, when in fact, I'm the age of 29 with salt and peppered hair. I'm usually pressed aside because of my young-looking demeanor, whether I'm a child or a young man knowing nothing, until the subject arrives over my military tattoos and short, frank answers my service. Afterwards, since that moment, I'm either highly revered or treated as if I might snap at any moment because I'm a veteran. Always with this situation, I know that I am doomed for a layoff or slotted to be transferred to less work, less job sites. It always seems I may have just kept my head down. If I had just kept my head down, I would have been all right. Yet on the other hand, with my salty, crusty veteran outlook, I strive through it until they know that I am not giving up until I get back to the mix of work and won't give up so easily. 6 years after my separation, I still haven't found the camaraderie as I did in my unit, squad, and team. I usually end my day with the phrase of the day equaling what could say expletive, deletive. I'll just say it. Fuck my life. That is what my struggle is like while working, looking for work or whatever. Here's another response. Basically, I feel like I'm not pretty much doing anything good anymore. Like being deployed, we were helping people and protecting our great nation. And I don't feel that anymore. I just live day to day. It's the same thing over and over with my job and life. And in turn, I feel depressed. Let's go to the next one. I've been home for 9 years. I have struggles with PTSD and depression. I sought help from the VA, took meds, received counseling. I got to a point where I was functioning without meds. My marriage failed. I was knocking the ball out of the park at work, but they kept giving me more and more responsibilities. I cracked at work and went from a hard charger to a terminal lance. For those of you who don't know what a terminal lance is, basically it's an E3 who is not going to rise above that rank. I had a breakdown after my mom was diagnosed with cancer. My dad's health declined. My wife tried taking my son away. The Iraq dreams came back about a year ago. I started having episodes of hypervigilance, scanning the grocery store parking lot, knowing I'm not in Iraq, but completely feeling like I'm in another combat patrol. My arms weren't postured as if I was holding a rifle, but I had a sensation that I was at the low ready. I wake up at night sometimes and reach for my service rifle, etc. I now have extreme anxiety issues. I've been in treatment again for about 9 months. I did have a period where I was drinking more than I was comfortable with, but I come from a family of addiction. I forced myself to stop. I'm barely capable at work any longer. I leave sometimes because of panic attacks. This fucking sucks. Here's the next one. For me, the hardest part has been transitioning from the Marine Corps to civilian. We handle things differently and expect institutions as well as older adults to have a professional sense about them. Learning to adapt to their chaos and lack of organization at times is frustrating. During the summer, I attended a course at a university, and I was told I was too rigid, too bossy, and was almost like Jekyll and Hyde in my personalities. This does not mean I possess multiple personalities, but I do put on different hats for different occasions. As Marines, we were taught to be professional, but we also understand that there's a time and place for play. My husband is currently a Marine, and so at home we talk to each other in a language we both understand. However, the outside world doesn't talk or act in this manner. As a veteran, you almost feel a closer connection with veterans, active duty, and patriots because they understand you more. And that's just a few of the responses I got. And as we all take this journey, we are all going to run into what seem like walls, what seem like impenetrable force fields that keep us from moving forward, that keep us from moving towards our goals, that keep us from being happy, and that keep us from being comfortable in our own skin. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about a book called The Peter Principle. And as we go through this book, I want you to understand something about it. The Peter Principle is a theory made by a social scientist. And as a former social scientist, I can tell you this. When we talk about theory, we're not talking about a measure of reality. We're talking about a pattern that's observed. And this pattern doesn't necessarily speak to reality. It just helps us to understand reality a little bit better. The book itself is very insightful, though it is a little bit heavy on the social science at times. But what I want you to take a grasp of as Jeff, Randy, and I are talking about this is that you are not necessarily trapped in anything. You might feel like you are, but you're not. And the reason is because of something we're going to find in the Peter Principle. Most of your holdbacks in life are because you yourself have to grow. You yourself have to move forward and become a stronger and better human being if you're going to get over a lot of these things. And so, rather than sitting there and saying, I'm trapped, rather than sitting there and saying, the world doesn't love me, the world doesn't like me, the world wants me to fail, you have to understand something about the world. The world is always going to act like the world. You, on the other hand, you have a job, and that is to learn about the world, and in turn, to learn about yourself and how you can strengthen yourself in order to get to the point where the world doesn't seem like a scary place anymore. So with that, before we get into this conversation, I want to introduce my two companions on this show. They are Jeff and Randy, and they run a veteran-oriented podcast named AlphaCast, which I had the pleasure of being guest on last week. Jeff did 6 years in the Air Force. He was at Elmendorf Air Force Base, and he did 3 years at Fort Polk. He got out as a staff sergeant. The AlphaCast is his fourth business effort, and he's been everything from a car salesman to a wildland firefighter. And he's a father to two girls. Randy is a United States Marine Corps veteran. And he was in the Air Wing. Currently, Randy works as a government contractor, and he is somewhere overseas. What rank did you get out as, Randy?
I was a sergeant when I got out.
Okay. Randy was a sergeant when he got out, and by the end of his enlistment, he was a crew chief and aerial observer gunner. So both these guys have been out there in the world for a while, And what I want to do is just have Jeff and Randy talk a little bit about their podcast, what they're about, and what kind of message they're trying to bring to veterans in the wider community. So, Jeff or Randy, take it away.
Yeah, well, hey, this is Jeff speaking, by the way, but thank you very much for having us on your show. I really appreciate it. As far as the AlphaCast, you know, here a couple of months ago, I basically decided there were a whole lot of voices out there that are representing the veteran community, but I don't think they represent the veteran community in a very positive light. So what I decided was that Randy and I needed to start a podcast in an effort to try and reach out to veterans who might be in a period of transition, somebody that's maybe gotten out of the military or like your first respondent that you read to your survey there, somebody that's been laid off of jobs or whatever the case may be, and just trying to remind them that you're not a failure, you're not different, you're not inhuman, you are extremely skilled, extremely capable, and you can go on and take life by the balls. And so that's really been our message. And something I'll say is our episode zero, if somebody wants to learn a little bit more about the AlphaCast, they can find us on SoundCloud, AlphaCast Media. But episode zero explains it really well. And I think that between Randy and I, we have some pretty valid experience about what it takes to kind of fall into civilian life.
Awesome. Awesome. Definitely. And you know, we had our conversations last week about what we thought was going on in the veteran community and some of these different types of negative influencers that we see. You know, the guys who are kind of making PTSD cool, the guys who are kind of making being an asshole cool. And, you know, I've got love for all of them. I mean, if they're going out there and they're putting their voice out there, awesome. At the same time, you have to question yourself and you have to think, is this really helping the community? Is this really helping veterans move forward? Is this really helping veterans to advance as a class? And when it comes down to it, in my mind, I think that it's really a bunch of guys saying, you know what? The world is the problem. We're not the problem. And when I say we're not the problem, I'm not accusing veterans of being a problem in and of themselves. What I'm saying is that you have it within your control to grow. You have it within your control to change. And that's something I really want to get into today with the Peter Principle and this material. Randy, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with AlphaCast.
Basically, just like Jeff said, he called me up one day and gave me this spiel, and it was, he explained to me kind of what he wanted to do through motivating vets, and it was just something I had been thinking about for a long time. For a little while there, I bought in the same sort of things of, I'm not going to fit into society, I'm going to have so many problems, no one out there is like me, they don't understand, but problem that I had, and I think a lot of problems a veteran has, is that they're putting the spotlight on themselves, and it's not so much about each individual. You can, as veterans, we can adapt to anything we have. We've already shown that, and we talked about that in episode zero, how you go to boot camp or basic training, you're not holding on to how you were when you were 17 in high school. Mm-hmm. You adapted to this new way of living and moved on and progressed and grew with that. And I don't really see too much of a difference between going from civilian to military and then to military back to civilian. You're still growing. There's no reason to hold on to any kind of animosity towards anyone else because they haven't experienced the same things that you have.
Right. And that's a really good point. When we talk about animosity and we talk about anger, you know, it's a lot of the things that we forget is that going from civilian to military, we had that transition, just like you said. And for us to think that that transition is going to be any easier from military to civilian, that's something we have to put into perspective. That's something we have to think, you know, it's going to take some time. It's going to take some work, just like it took work to get into the military. It's going to take some work to get ourselves into the civilian world and to be productive members of civilian society and to feel comfortable again. So Jeff recommended this book, and it's called The Peter Principle, and it's by Lawrence J. Peter and Raymond Hull. And Jeff, tell me a little bit why you wanted to go over this book and what this book did for you, and maybe relate it back to some of your own experiences as a civilian and in the military, because this applies very highly to the military as well.
Yeah. I'll tell you that I stumbled on this book, and it's kind of a funny book to me. It's humorous in the way that it tackles a specific issue. And I stumbled onto it after I mentioned The Office, the TV show. I read that Michael Scott was the epitome of the Peter Principle. And basically what it is that everyone has in them a level of incompetence. You have a point which is your ceiling in any given specific skill set. So, you know, what I like to do is I like to think about myself in this type of situation, and I think about what my weaknesses are. Now, I believe that in a lot of cases, I have untapped potential. I have skill sets that I've never even used that can take me as far as I want to go. But if I get into the wrong line of work, I absolutely have a ceiling. I have a level of incompetence. And a perfect example was a job whenever I was a manager of a housekeeping staff at a hospital. I was very, very bad at that job. I got paid well, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't sit in the office. I wasn't very good at managing that specific group of people, and it wasn't a good fit for me. And so I was at my level of incompetence. And this book is amazing in that it showed me all of the things that I was doing that were basically signals or signs, symptoms of incompetence. And one of the things that I've mentioned was, you know, letting papers stack up on your desk. And then I had a constantly cluttered desk. And if somebody came and they needed me to make a big decision, I said, I can't do it right now. You know, I've got all this stuff to handle. You know, all this stuff on my desk, all these papers that I need to look at. And the reality was, it was junk. You know, it was all trash. But the book is there's a lot of different examples within that book of that same concept of, you know, basically these are signals that basically you've reached your complete level of incompetence.
Right, right. And the point of the book was to explain why there's so many incompetent people throughout the world, right? And so this guy, I believe is Dr. Lawrence J. Peter, he basically came up with this theory, and he said, in any hierarchical situation where there are ranks, meaning like most corporate jobs, most government positions, all military positions, people will eventually rise to their level of incompetence. So at some point, you know, for example, you could be an outstanding secretary or an outstanding middle manager, and you could have all your people lined up, all your sales lined up, but the second you get promoted to vice president, you're introduced to something new and something you're not trained for. And so at that point, you're going to have reached your level of incompetence. So because you're not qualified for the job, you're going to start messing things up, and your work is going to be crappy, and you're not going to be a happy person, I think is one of the other points that Dr. Peter makes. You're going to feel miserable. You're going to feel completely out of your own skin. And I think
– well, specifically, it's any hierarchy that promotes based on merit.
Mm-hmm.
And so he used a specific example of a mechanic. You have a guy that's working inside of a mechanic shop, and he's extremely good at his job. He loves it. He's an excellent mechanic. So they promote him to shop foreman, and now he's managing people instead of working on cars. Well, the problem is he doesn't have that skill set. Maybe he's not as good at talking to people, or he's not as good at managing an office, dealing with paperwork, whatever. And so he basically left his core competency, the thing he was great at, the thing he was happy at, because he felt driven to take that next step to get promoted. And then he, you know, found his level of incompetence. I think it's interesting, but it's so accurate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I definitely think it's accurate, and it speaks to different patterns we see. One of the things that I saw from it, though, is that because it is a piece of social science, it is almost a cold reading of human nature. And what do I mean by that? there's almost something cynical here. And it's in Peter's advice to creative incompetence. So his advice to people who don't want to reach their level of incompetence is to appear incompetent at the job you're currently in. So he said, if you have a desk and you're normally really neat, throw a bunch of papers on your desk, make it look like you're going out of your mind with your job, but you're getting your work done so that you don't get fired, and that way you'll never get promoted. And I remember back when I was a corporal in the Marine Corps, I didn't want to get promoted to sergeant for anything. Because a little bit about me, I absolutely loved being a Lance Corporal. It was awesome. Like, it was the best time of your life. And I think for those of you who are in the military and listening, you have to understand something. If you're a private PFC, Lance Corporal, E1, E2, E3, dude, you are in the prime of your life. You're getting paid. You don't have to worry about anything except being told what to do. You are basically set, right? And so bottom line is appreciate that and be present and learn everything you can and be a good Marine, soldier, sailor, airman. But at the same time, appreciate what you have right now, because once you pin on those NCO stripes, you are going to be in another world. You're going to be dealing with a bunch of things that you hadn't dealt with yet, and you're not really going to know what to do with them until you go to your corporal's course, until you go to your sergeant's course and you're trained to. But back to the book, I mean, that was a really cynical way of looking at things in my mind. What do you think about that, Randy?
I don't think it was too cynical. I think it, he made some good points. Every principle he discussed, I imagine someone that I've known at some point, or even myself in some instances, where it's not a level of complete incompetence, but can sort of be self-aware of where you stand in that. And it's a lot easier to notice where someone else is incompetent. There's plenty of examples in the book of like teachers. They started out teaching young children, okay, then they get promoted to the primary teacher, then assistant principal, then principal, move up to a superintendent. And while they even were very competent up to the point of being a principal, once they reached superintendent and they had to deal with parents and the district and everyone else having a problem with what they viewed as their incompetence, they kind of proved their own incompetence through that, just by not knowing how to deal with those people in that situation.
But what about the point of, creating incompetence so that you don't move forward, or creating a situation where you're not going to get promoted?
Oh yeah. No. I, just like you said, you love being a Lance Corporal. I wasn't a corporal until about 3.5, almost 4 years in. And that was a really long time. I got the NJP, as most of us do. I didn't do my MCIs, didn't do anything that was required of me to pick up E4 corporal. And I was at the highest level of competence as a Lance Corporal, as a senior Lance Corporal in the entire unit, with the most qualifications. So I was very competent there as a Lance Corporal, but I dumbed myself down to make everyone think I couldn't get promoted. That's something I may not have realized at the time, but something that a lot of people do.
And do you think that was good for you, or do you think that was...
No. That wasn't good for me. Mm-hmm. I didn't know my competence level, but I also didn't know my potential. Mm-hmm. And once I went on to corporal and sergeant, I realized that I could handle it, and I had grown. And in that instance, it was not good for me.
Right. So at that point, you learned that you had to grow, and you learned some things about yourself probably from becoming a corporal, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
What about you, Jeff?
I have an interesting take that probably answers your question a little differently. As far as, is it a cynical take on life to say that you have a level of incompetence and that you should do what you can to stay at your level of competence? I would say that I do think that's cynical, but I think that we have to embrace something. You know, anybody that was born from the baby boomer generation or anyone after has been told their entire life that you are a snowflake. You are absolutely an individual, and you could be president if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. The reality is, everyone has a ceiling. You have a place of competence, and you have a place of incompetence. But I don't think the key is to go out and find the thing that you're passionate about. I don't think your goal should be to if you love singing, just that doesn't mean you're going to be the best singer in the entire world. You know, I think that what you should do is find what you're competent in. Find something that you're good at and exploit those talents and drive that as far as you possibly can. I don't know if it is cynical to say don't try and grow up. I don't recommend somebody don't really want to try and better yourself every single day, but you should try and better yourself in the things that you're great at and the things that make you happy. So I think you would be an excellent example of that. You know, you've taken fitness, which for a lot of people is a hobby, and you've turned it into not only a lifestyle but a business. And I think that's exactly what everybody needs to do.
I think that I agree with you on a couple of points. I think that you need to find what you're good at. But there's a few things. Whenever I'm trying to work with somebody and trying to get them to move forward, there's a few things that I ask them to do. And the first is this. I ask them what they wanted to be when they were 5 years old, right? To think about that. And then I ask them what they wanted to be when they were 12 to 14 years old. And the reason why I ask for those two ages is because when you're five, you're dreaming, right? Your mom tells you all this stuff and you have this kind of magical view of the world. When you're 12 to 14, you actually have, you're at your prime IQ, right? That's when you are probably at the smartest you're ever going to be in your life and your greatest ability to absorb information. And I'm speaking statistically. I could talk about myself when I was a 12-year-old and I was a freaking idiot. But when I think back to it, what I wanted to do when I was 12 to 13 to 14 years old, I was really into fitness. And I absolutely loved training. And I absolutely loved anything to do with exercise. And thinking back on it, that kind of played out in my life. At the same time, as I went on in my fitness career, I continued to find that I was rising to my level of incompetence. So I think that society has these ways of trying to encase us into specific job fields. So to give you an example, when I was at the height of my training career, I was almost miserable. And I was miserable for a few reasons. The first thing was this. I was spending so much of my time putting into other people and giving. You know, people don't understand this about the training profession. When you are doing 6 to 8 sessions a day and you get toward the end of your day, every one of those clients takes a little bit of energy out of you. And the more tired I got, the more crabby I got. And the more crabby I got, the more I started to go back to things that I used to do in the Marine Corps, where I would almost, you know, it was back when I was feeling like I wasn't really into being a Marine anymore. Like I was just kind of tired of it. And I was just kind of, you know, I can't wait for my enlistment to be up. And so by the end of the day, I was always just doing things just to get people through the session. And one day I woke up and I said to myself, if I have to do this for the rest of my life, I'm not going to be a happy person. And so that's when I started to get into online training. And that's when I started to explore my passion from a different level. And that means, you know, I started doing videos. I started doing the online programs. I started to be able to take on more clients. And I started to make more money because of that. Because my limits were kind of taken away. And then at that point, I also, there came a point when I was doing that, that, you know, I had 100 clients online. And so I was spending all of my time constructing programs, and I was sitting in front of an Excel spreadsheet for 8 hours a day. And that's when I said to myself, you know what? It's time for me to stop the fitness thing for now. I still want to create fitness content. I still want to put things out there. I still want to write books. But doing the online training has brought me to my limits and my capacity of being able to do it. And so what I think the big thing is, when you're exploring your passion, when you're exploring what you're good at, you also have to make sure that you don't fall into becoming a technician. And because when you become a technician, what happens is you kind of pigeonhole yourself into doing those things. You pigeonhole yourself into doing the technical things that make up whatever your trade is, whatever your business is. The best thing to do is to look at alternative ways of doing it. So you might not be the best speaker, so you might not be able to go on video. You might not be able to do a podcast, but maybe you can write. You might not be the best, the best music player, but maybe you have a great, awesome ear for music, and maybe you love music. Maybe you can write reviews about music. And I'm going into the entrepreneurial world right now, and I don't necessarily need to do that. But my point is, when you're looking at your passion, look at it from multiple perspectives, and you always have to think of the end game in mind. Are you going to be happy when you're actually doing the job that you want?
Right. Well, my take on the whole thing is that you find your competency, you find the thing that you're good at, and then you pursue that. And you have to accept that things are going to turn somewhere down the road. And I read an interesting thing, and it was a long time ago, and I wish I could remember who wrote it. But it was basically that a guy started a business, and let's just say that he started out selling blue squares, whatever, you know, the blue squares are. They're just any product. And then over time, as his business started to grow, he realized that people actually wanted red circles, and then he started making red circles, and then he found that he was really good at making the best green triangles. But his business evolved along with him. And along with his skill sets and along with his competency. But if you find yourself in a place where you're uncomfortable, that's whenever you need to be able to stop and reassess. You need to say, I'm in a position where I have to make a decision. I have to make a change right now. Just like you did. You were in a situation that was uncomfortable. Your workload was too much. You weren't happy with your life, but you knew where your competency was. And you decided to reassess and then change, adapt. And that's what I think that veterans are particularly good at. Every single job that I ever did when I was in the military was either thrown in my lap or it was supposed to be the same job that I've always been doing, but I was in a new place and the policies and procedures were completely different. Mm-hmm. So the key is to utilize that specific skill set, which is it's part owned. You know, you're born with it, you have it, you're raised with it, and then partly it's trained. So I learned that in the military that I have to be flexible and adapt, and it's no different in the civilian world. Whenever you start looking at your life and your job, you say, am I competent here? Am I happy? Am I doing good work? And if the answer to any of those questions is no, then reassess and take a new step in a new direction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a big thing. I really think that flexibility is key. The ability to grow, the ability to learn as a human being. Now, Jeff, you run 4 businesses, right?
Yeah, I have.
So tell us a little bit about that. Tell us a little bit about those experiences. You don't have to go too into depth, but tell us about, you know, the processes that you went through each time, going through it, when you realized one wouldn't work, when you realized that another one might work, and you moved on.
Yeah, so how much I want to go into it, I'm not sure, but I'll tell you that My very first business I started when I was 20 years old. My grandfather, when I was a kid growing up, used to make and sell outdoor furniture. And as he passed away, we noticed the legacy was starting to go to the wayside. So I started making and selling outdoor furniture. I was really, really good at making furniture. I was really, really good at talking to customers and making sales. I was really, really bad at managing the back end of the business. I just wasn't any good at it. And I remember very specifically one day I took a load of furniture to a trade show. I had sold a couple of $1,000 worth of furniture in one weekend, and I was super pumped, and I had this fat stack of cash in my hand, and I gave out some to my help, and then I put gas in my truck, and I paid for my lot at the trade show, and then I drove to the house, and I had all this money in my hand, and I started doing math, and if you counted for all the materials that I spent, the help that I paid for, the lot, gas driving there, I actually lost a couple of $100 on that weekend. And that was, to me, a wake-up call. It was time to get out of that business. You can't hemorrhage money. I spent a long time trying to figure out if there was any profitability in it at all. And the answer was pretty much no. The cost of materials was so high, and the cost of new customer acquisition was so high that it was nearly impossible. So that business was really just a learning experience from being a first-time business owner. The second business I started was a carpet cleaning business, and I started that just after I finished cleaning hospitals as a housekeeping director. And I don't know why that I thought that I would be good at cleaning carpet since I was so bad at cleaning hospitals. It was a profitable business right out the gate. I made good money. I would probably still be doing it if it wasn't for some bad decisions I made in business partners. But I'll say that, you know, what's more important to me is the Alpha Cast right now. And whenever I start to think about Randy and I's roles, I think that we're playing more to our strengths now than I've ever played to my strengths in the past, which would be I'm really good at talking to people. I'm really good at being a vocal sort of perspective. I think I'm a creative mind. But I'm really bad at the back end side of the business. And I've told Randy this. I couldn't possibly do this without his help because he's a lot more detail-oriented and driven in that manner than I am.
Awesome. And you know, that's some gold right there, because one of the things I've learned, and I've failed as a business owner too, is that with every business you do, it's like getting another MBA. It's like getting another degree. And even if you fail at it, with anything in life, if you get defeated, it's not a failure. You get defeated, you learn something from it. And then you learn a little bit more about yourself and what you're good at and what you're not good at. And so as you're rising to your levels of incompetence within each thing, it tends to teach you a little bit more about yourself, what you're going to be happy doing, what you're good at, and it also teaches you your weaknesses. So it forces you to start to look to other people, to try to start to form a team. And, you know, looks like you guys have done that. You've formed a team and you developed, you know, this Alpha Cast, and you are working off of each other and happy.
We are very happy doing this. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'm happy with Randy.
You're happy with Randy?
I wanted to make a joke about he's also my partner in life, but I don't want anyone to think right. That's true.
Yeah, that's all.
Okay. That was going to be my joke.
So tell me, what have you learned from doing the Alpha Cast? What has it taught you about, one, about yourselves, but also about the veteran community and about podcasting, about communicating?
Well, I'll tell you that it's still a learning process. You know, we're new, and as I told you whenever we interviewed you, that we haven't officially launched yet. So we've done what I call a soft launch. We're on SoundCloud, but we're not really anywhere else. So we're still kind of learning as we go. I will tell you that I want to say the greatest shift in my mentality is I was so upset about the negative voices in the veteran community, that I wasn't paying enough attention to the positive voices that are out there. I think yours is one, but there's several. I mean, you talked about Jocko Willink and then Leif Babin are two great guys. And I'll say that recognizing that there are 23.5 million veterans as of the last, you know, study that I saw, and 23.5 million veterans are out there kicking ass and taking names every single day. And those are the people that I want to talk to. And so we've been able to make some really good connections. And I hope that as we continue moving forward, we'll be able to bring those voices to people that are in that period of transition like we talked about.
Cool. Randy, what about you?
Same thing. There's not enough. Just the way society views us and the way we view ourselves, I don't think is, in the grand scheme, it's not positive. It's not popular to be proud of yourself and everything that you've done, realizing the strength that you've shown and everything you've gotten past. And that's part of the, being in the military, one of the skills that you learn that you can't, it's really hard to place a finger on and say, I have this skill. You don't realize it because while you're in the military, everyone else has the same skill for the most part. But yeah, there's not enough positive light shed on success stories in the military. And we wanted to bring some light to that. Kind of put away some of the negativity. I, just like Jeff said earlier about everyone's a snowflake, we've kind of nobilized and made things popular and romantic in our society that should not be popular and romantic. You know, drug and alcohol addiction, suicide, psychological disorders. We've kind of put this crown on it and made it like this nice, pretty thing that should be looked at in a glorious manner. And it's really not. And we'd like to put a stop to that by showing everyone the positive light of what being a veteran is about. And as far as podcasting and the business side, the only thing I knew about podcasts was the few podcasts that I had listened to before. And I knew nothing about running a business, what that entailed, but I've learned, and it's pretty exciting to me. I like doing it.
That's cool.
I like being a part of this.
That's awesome. And that's the thing. Part of this was you guys keeping an open mind about what you were going to be able to do, what you would do, based off of, you know, insight, based off of travels that you've had, based off of your experiences. And you found something that you love doing. I want to ask you guys this question. Why do you think there's this tendency, or why do you think that people are gravitating to a lot of the negative voices in the veteran community? And let, just for our purposes, define those negative voices. Tell me what those negative voices are, and tell me why you think people are gravitating toward them.
Can I use profanity?
Absolutely. I said fuck before, so I'm going to put I'll put the explicit mark on iTunes. It's our first time doing it, and I tried not to curse, but if you want to curse, by all means, my brother.
It's just these guys that have this stay the fuck away from me kind of mentality. And they're extremely vocal and super angry, and they refer to every single civilian out there as a potato, which I get, I guess. You know, I do feel like the average veteran is a little bit sharper than your average civilian as far as when it comes to making critical decisions or thinking on your feet. But I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand a lot of the guys that would have no reason to have PTSD or have any kind of trauma would be so willing to embrace that kind of, I don't know. It's like a badge of honor or something, you know, like you want to wear the t-shirt that says, stay away from me, I'm dangerous kind of thing. And it doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't compute. I think that maybe a part of it is trying to fit into a community And I just feel like maybe they're, because they feel like they're displaced. You know, they missed the brotherhood, they missed the military, and they see this huge group of people that have similar backgrounds and similar experiences, and they're all doing the same thing. You call it social proof, and I think that's accurate. I think that maybe they found somebody doing something, and so they all do it together. I don't know.
Yeah,
the same thing. I think our society, like I say, I think has nobilized certain things that are extremely negative. Not just drug, alcohol addiction, psychological disorders, but crime. Like there's so many things that should be negative. We should look down upon, but it's become popular in our society to not be successful or to not rise up, because now you've put yourself in a position where you face more adversity than the other guy, because I can't place my finger on it or why anyone wants to be sympathized for or looked down upon. I don't get it. I think we need to get away from that as much as possible, not only for ourselves, but for the society that views us in a certain light.
Just to clarify a couple of things, and all great points. One of the things I mentioned when Jeff and Randy were interviewing me was this concept of social proof. And I've talked about it before on this podcast. And basically what that means is that when you see somebody who looks like you, has your similar background, acting or doing something, it makes you more likely to do it too. And so, you know, we've had this issue of veteran suicide, and, you know, the 22 a day campaigns and things like that. And one of my arguments, I said this in my first podcast ever, my first podcast episode, was that I wasn't going to mention it anymore. I didn't want to mention it anymore. And there's a few reasons. One, because it's not accurate. It's more like one a day. But two, the big thing in my mind is that if we keep saying this 22 a day thing, this 22 veterans a day thing, it's going to make it more likely that more people are going to commit suicide based off of what we know about social proof. When I think about a lot of these types of negative influencers and what they're doing out there, I really see a couple of different things. Coming from the fitness industry and working in a business where I had limited contact with a lot of other veterans, I was working with straight civilians in the fitness industry. I was heavy into YouTube, and I have a YouTube fitness channel that a lot of people know me from. And what I noticed from the YouTube community was that people would do things just to be controversial or just to shock people, just to get more views. And while part of me thinks that a lot of these guys are legitimately sending, you know, help me calls out over the internet, you know, there's some guys who are getting into this just to speak their minds, and I applaud them for that. At the same time, I think that there's some people out there who are mainly just trying to get views and mainly just trying to get likes on Facebook. And in my mind, that's awful. That's not a good thing.
It's self-serving. It's not.
Absolutely. I've mentioned this before, and it's a little bit unrelated to Peter's principle, but I mentioned this before about the guy named Grant Cardone. Have you ever heard of that guy?
Yes, sir. 10X.
Yeah, so Grant Cardone, what's that?
10X. 10X everything.
Yeah. So he said that whenever he basically got successful, the day that he knew he was going to be successful was the day that he decided that he was going to stop wasting his time with people who aren't driven, who aren't successful. And I think that's something that maybe a lot of people should consider, that the people that you associate with absolutely have an impact on your mental state. And if the people you're associating with aren't driven, they don't have goals, they don't have dreams, and all they want to do is sit around and they want to gripe about life and how it's beating them down, those people are going to hold you back. So that's our point. That's the point of the AlphaCast. That's why we're doing this. There are so many veterans out there who are successful. I mean, you go on the veteran business listings and there's, you know, tens of thousands of veteran entrepreneurs out there, if not millions, who are extremely successful. and just happy and living life and making it happen. And I don't understand why we as a community don't want to say, I want to hear from those guys. I don't want to hear from the guys who didn't do anything. Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's an element of fear there? Do you think there's an element that a lot of veterans are feeling that Peter principle there where, you know, they feel like they've hit their level of incompetence? Do you feel like they're afraid to get uncomfortable? They're afraid to learn new things?
I think that a lot of people don't understand what uncomfortable is. You know, we live in a first world society. We live in the United States of America. I mean, there are very few people out there in the United States that are legitimately starving to death. I mean, we're talking about proportionately. There are very few people out there that are living on the streets and literally, if they choose to, well, cannot get out of it. You know what I mean? There are very few people out there that don't have some kind of option. And a lot of times the people's own mentality is what's holding them back. And so when we talk about entrepreneurship or whenever we talk about finding a new job, getting employed, if you're sitting at the house and you're comfortable right now, if you're sitting in your, you know, in your bedroom or you're sitting on your couch and you're eating some Oreos and you're watching, you know, Judge Judy on TV, yeah, you're comfortable. You're comfortable physically, but you should be extremely uncomfortable if you are not progressing in your life. You should be uncomfortable sitting on that couch. Your future is where the real comfort is at. I tell Randy all the time, we're going to get, I'm not going to say it, but we're going to have ladies on private jets. That's going to happen.
That's awesome. I laugh, but honestly, dude, make it happen. Think big.
Yeah.
Think huge.
That's it. And,
you know?
And you know, of course, is whenever you get down the road, your dreams are going to change. You're going to moderate and you're going to say, well, I said that, but I was just joking around. You know, but at the same time, I'm looking for a level of independence, financial independence, employment independence. I'm looking for just a level of security. But the only kind of security that really matters to me is the security that you can have in and of yourself. I don't want to rely on some job that could come or go at any time. You know, I don't want to rely on someone else to feed me or take care of me. And by the way, you can work for somebody else and be successful and be fine and live a happy and wonderful life. I'm not against employment. You know, I have an interest in entrepreneurship as myself, but for someone else, you work for somebody else, that's fine, but you should seek out financial independence. You should want to not depend on your job. You do your job because that's what you have to do right now. But someday, your house is going to be paid for. You're not going to waste any more money. As a former car salesman, you're not going to waste any more money on stupid cars. You know, and you're going to get to that point where if you lost your job, it doesn't matter. You're not entirely reliant on someone else. And for me, that's the dream. That's the goal.
Right. And I think that a good point, and I'm going to steal this from Gary Vaynerchuk. I know that's kind of what's the word? Pop culture-ish almost now because Gary's so popular. But if you are working every day and you have a job and you go to work every day and you're happy and you don't complain, you have my 100% highest respect above anybody else in this world. My grandfather, he was an Italian American. He worked every day. He had two jobs. My mother, she had three jobs working when me and my sister were children. And she put food on our table. She was a single mother. And she never complained. But if you are unhappy with your life, if you want something about your life to change and you're not doing anything to change it, well, it's time. It's time to do something. It's time to move to something different. And with today's technology where, you know, Jeff, Randy and I are talking to each other in a network that spans around the world right now, you know, none of us are in the same location. It's possible for anyone. The barriers to entry are lower than they've ever been. So if you want to do a side business or if you wanted to just get on the internet and explore some hobbies that are going to make you smarter and make you work better with people, make you a little bit happier, productive hobbies, then you can do that. It's there for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think hobbies is a good point. You know, A lot of businesses are started through hobbies. People just enjoying tinkering with something, and then they produce something. That's, to me, the most important part of life, is just produce something, have some kind of output. And we're going to go back to the Peter principle here. Randy had an interesting point that maybe he can talk on a little bit better, but the automaton thing, you know, where the bureaucracy of government and the bureaucracy of workforce, you just check boxes. You fill out papers, and that's what you do all day. But what is your real output? What is it that you're actually creating? You know, in your specific case, Chris, you know, you're making the T-shirts. You've got your educational platform that you just launched. You've also got your podcast, and you've got your YouTube channel. And then of all those avenues that you have, each one of them you're creating or producing something. And if you're in a place in your life where, let's just say that you have a job that is unfortunately administrative and you're not actually producing any end results, get a hobby. You know, do something so that you can express that creative outlet and find your competency in something that creates something.
Awesome.
Randy. Yeah, with the administrative, anything that's where your job is to check boxes, at least take some pride in your work. From the time we're young, we're told to go to college so you can get a good job. But you have no idea what a good job is, and any job can be a good job. It's just as you said, Chris, if you can go to work and be happy and be satisfied with the work that you've done, you have everyone's utmost respect. And that's kind of a big deal that people don't realize. They think they want to make the most money and not use tools or work with their hands, but maybe they've never given that any thought as an option. And if you're going to an office and sitting in front of a desk, stagnant and not really sure what's going on, what to do, what your purpose is, that's going to make you very, very unhappy. The thing that Jeff is talking about, the point that I had, was about, it's one of the Peter's inversions, was professional automatism. So it's just about being by the book. And people always say the ends justify the means. Well, and professional automatism, the means justify the end. It's backwards. So they'll have a checklist that was created to do something in a certain manner, but then in the end, the checklist is all that matters to that person. And to me and you, that seems incredibly incompetent, but to their supervisors, they may think, okay, he's great with that checklist. He always checks all the boxes. He's a competent employee. My example that I had was, Chris, I know you know exactly what I'm talking about. IPAC. Are you familiar?
IPAC?
IPAC. It's kind of the administrative, I wouldn't call it a branch, but there's one on every base. You have to go there when you're going on terminal, getting out of the Marine Corps, PCS, that kind of thing. First of all, I'm not going to call everyone at IPAC a misfit from every other administrative shop, but Chesty Puller is not happy with IPAC. None of you are going to Chesty Heaven. So it's just saturated with this automatism and incompetence. I was getting out of the Marine Corps. I had 30 days of terminal leave, and it was the day before I was going on terminal. I submitted my package a month in advance, give them plenty of time. I've seen plenty of people get screwed over and have it messed up. So I was going to do the right thing, have my shit squared. And so I go in there the day before I'm going on terminal, say, hey, you guys got my stuff signed? And this female PFC with the lazy eye and drooling out of the corner of her mouth comes walking up and, can I help you? She's winded from the desk too. to the front door. Yeah, I submitted my package a month ago. I just want to see where it's at. I got to go on terminal tomorrow. She's like, oh, our OIC hasn't signed it. He's been really busy. Can you come back in a couple of weeks? Like, no, I think you just missed my last sentence, the part where I said I'm going to terminal tomorrow. And she said, okay, well, can you check back later with the OIC to see if he can sign it then? I said, hey, is that him right there? She's like, oh, yeah, that's him. Like, hey, sir, can I talk to you for a second? Yeah, sure, what's up? I'm going on terminal tomorrow. Can you sign this? Sure, yeah, no problem. And it's just like, it's not just IPAC or TSA or any government bureaucratic administration, whatever. You see this all over the place.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, one of the problems, I think from a child, we're taught to check, from the time of being a child, we're taught to check the box. And when you get to school, you're basically educated on working in a bureaucratic system, because that's the way our schools were shaped. They were shaped for people who were going to eventually take jobs, who were going to eventually work in, you know, very structured environments. The problem is when you get into a situation where the environment isn't so structured, or maybe the environment messes with you a little bit, and all you know how to do is that particular function. And they talk about that in the Peter Principle, right? I think there was a teacher where the classroom flooded, and she kept teaching. She kept her students in there, and the principal came in, and he was like, what are you doing? Why haven't you evacuated? And she said, because you didn't give the alarm to evacuate.
Right.
Yeah.
And yep. That's something we see. That's something we see amongst people in a highly bureaucratic organizations, because they get conditioned. They get conditioned to certain things. And they're conditioned to their function. One of our jobs.
Not common sense.
What was that?
Not common sense.
Right. They get rid of all common sense. And I, you know, we've seen that, you know, with PFCs and privates just getting out of boot camp. You know, they have problems just talking to people or putting sentences together sometimes, like I am right now. You know, they almost don't act like human beings anymore. And, you know, you have to take some time with them once they get out in the fleet to make them into human beings again, make them into critical thinkers again. And when you go through SOI, that gives you a little bit of a period there. But usually when people get stressed, that's when this type of thing starts to come in. You know, they start to make these really dumb errors that if they had any common sense whatsoever, they wouldn't make. At the same time, I think that all of us, as human beings, not just veterans, but as human beings, what we have to do is really look at ourselves and find these things, find where we're lacking common sense, and put ourselves out there into that almost unsure environment from time to time in order to develop the skills necessary to adapt, to take on whatever the world wants to throw at us, you know? And, I give the example of like bodybuilders a lot of the time. You put a bodybuilder in a squat rack or doing a Smith machine squat. That bodybuilder is probably going to be able to do, you know, 500, 600 pounds. You put that bodybuilder into an Olympic front squat position where he's got to use some thoracic extension. The environment's a bit different, and so he's not going to be able to do very much at all. And so for those of us who are working in these controlled environments or living in a bubble, you know, any of you college students out there who are currently doing your 4 years at school, or any of you veterans who left the military to go to college, you got to understand that that's a bubble as well. And that's someplace that you're going to get really used to. But once you get out into the world, it's going to be a little bit different. And if you're just getting up with your enlistment and you're about to head out in the world, you have to understand that the world is going to be a little bit different. But you have to steel yourself toward that, and you have to understand that if the world's different, it's not the world's fault. It's you. You got to grow. You got to learn things. You got to put yourself in situations that are going to teach you.
Absolutely. Something that I say, and it's right along with what I said earlier on, is that you have to find your competency. And the only way that you're going to find what you're good at, the only way you're going to find your strengths and your aptitudes is also find your weaknesses. You have to be defeated, just like I was in business early on. And you also have to be kicked in the teeth every now and again to learn exactly how strong you are. And then whenever you're able to dial in and find your specific strengths, now you can really start seeking what I think is true happiness. You know, not just a level of comfort, but a level of driven, goal-oriented labor that will eventually provide real comfort down the road. And I think that's key. You know, whenever you get out of the military, it is an extremely different environment. The people that you talk to don't think the same way. They don't talk the same way. They don't even walk the same way. And this is me talking as an airman. You know, I mean, I come out and I just notice that your average civilian, in my opinion, isn't as apt to be able to think critically or to think quickly or to be able to make decisions on their own. They're not as – obviously, they're – I'm generalizing. But it was a different world, and so it took me a period of adjustment where I really had to learn exactly how I fit into this new world. And the only way to do that is to, as Randy says so many times, immerse yourself in it. You have to be fully involved in what you're doing to find your weaknesses and your strengths.
Awesome. And one of the things you said before, where you have a lot of these guys out there that are talking about every other civilian like they're potatoes. One thing, you know, if you're having a problem integrating into the civilian world and you're trying to find your place, you know, take the girl I mentioned at the beginning who was having an issue in college dealing with her fellow classmates. One of the things you can start to think about, or the way you could change your thinking, is rather than thinking about them as these awful human beings who just, you know, they're completely lazy, haven't been able to do anything, haven't talked about anything, haven't done much of anything in their lives, maybe you can switch it around and look at the value that you can provide to them. Maybe you can be a mentor to some of these civilians. Maybe you could teach them a thing or two, and maybe that could give you some purpose.
You know, something that I like to go and
start yelling at them. And
so something specifically that I like to talk on is understanding that you can't, in any shape, form, or fashion, change the way other people think. You can't. I mean, if you have a political discussion with somebody that has the complete opposite views of you, and then you'll see how true that is. You're not going to change someone's beliefs. You're not going to change their own personal mentality. So the only thing that you change is how you react to the people that you engage with every single day. The only thing that you have any power or control over is your own personal thought process and emotions. And so there's a perfect example that I have. When I was in the Wildland Firefighting Academy, I had a very good buddy of mine. He was a Marine veteran. He was a tanker. And he was a big, tough dude. You know, he was a bodybuilder, full beard, you know. And he and I got along really well because we both have a kind of shared background, even though, you know, obviously I wasn't a combat troop. But we were standing in one day as wildland firefighters, part of our job. You know, we hike up in rocky terrain, and we're swinging axes all day long, carrying chainsaws everywhere. So it's a physically demanding job. And there were some guys in our academy class that were doughy, is probably the best word I can use. And so we're sitting around, we're having a discussion about how, hey, you know, class is going to be out early this week, so why don't we take that extra hour that we're still getting paid, and let's go do some PT together. You know, let's do some kind of group fitness routine and see if we can start upping our levels of fitness. And everyone was extremely resistant to it. They weren't interested. No one wanted to work out. No one wanted to exercise. And so this big, tough former Marine stands up, and he looks everybody in the front of the classroom, and he says, you know, if you guys don't want to go be physically fit and this job requires physical fitness, then you need to walk out right now, and maybe GameStop is hiring down the street. Now, I laughed.
because that's 100% accurate. If you can't do the physical demands of the job, I don't want you. I don't want my life in your hands at some point on the fire line.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone got upset. Everyone got extremely mad. They got upset with him. I think one guy cried. I don't know. I don't remember. But everyone was extremely emotional about it. And then he got written up. He got in all kinds of trouble because their mentality is different. Now, he can't change the way that they would react to something that he says. The only thing he can change is what he says.
Mm-hmm.
So if he had come at it a little bit differently, he could have taken some of these kids, 19, 20 years old, and he could have said, hey, guys, you know what? Here's the job. This is what we're going to have to do. And someday, my life may be in your hands. Now, I trust you because you're intelligent, and I know that you can work hard. However, let's make sure that our physical fitness is on the same level, and then lead from the front the way that you were taught to do whenever you're in the Marines or the Army or Air Force, wherever you were. Lead from the front and show them how to be physically fit.
Mm-hmm.
If he had done that, I think that he might have had a much greater impact on their personal fitness levels.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's not how what's it called? It's not what you say, it's how you say it. And
right.
If you're able to approach a person in a way that you're going to get them to want to do something. I mean, you can go back to Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Outstanding book. The only way he says the only way to get people to do anything is to get them to want to do it. And, you know, I know I'm a fanboy for Jocko Willink, but, if you listen to him, you listen to his podcast, you know, this is one of the most badass Navy SEAL commanders of all time. One of the things he preaches is that even in the military, if you want somebody to do something, you have to get them to want to do it. You can order them, but if you're just ordering them and you're not just and you're yelling at them and screaming at them and telling them to do something, then they're not going to do it to their utmost ability.
Right. And this spreads to every facet of everyday life. It's beyond business, beyond employment, every single facet of everyday life. And there's some kind of philosopher a long time ago that said that you can only get something that you want. You can only acquire something in one of two ways. You can take it by force, so you can steal it, or you can force somebody to do it through threat of life, limb, or property. Or you could use your reasoning, and you can encourage them through, you know, either what you just said, you know, by being the example, or by leading from the front, like I said, or you know, just being using your cunning, you know, your how you communicate with people. And so if you're having a hard time communicating with people, just like that person that's having a difficult time in college, you have to be able to accept that you actually do have a weakness. While your strength may be making decisions and being a hard worker, you have to be self-aware enough to say that I have a weakness and that I can't get these people to do what I need them or want them to do because I'm communicating poorly.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And again, that goes back to some of the answers we saw at the beginning of the podcast from the survey it put out. You know, that Marine who feels like civilians around him are looking at him like he's too young, or they're looking at him like he's going to snap, or they're looking at him as being somebody who's just not mixing well in our culture. I think part of that is that Marine has to do some work.
Absolutely.
He has to really, and that's not to say that, you know, he's a bad human being. It's just to say that you have to do some work on yourself in order to get that transition down. And you have to realize
right.
that not everybody, when you get out, is going to think the same way you do. And that's okay, right?
I think that maybe... Go ahead, Ray.
Sorry, Jeff. One thing I don't tell a lot of people about myself, but something that at least the first guy, if not some of the others that wrote back to your survey, fake it until it becomes natural.
Mm-hmm.
Just try that on for size. Just fake it. And you don't have to change. You don't have to think any differently. But that might have kind of a positive influence on your demeanor and the way that you see other people. If you can make other people be happy around you, you might find yourself doing a little better in life.
I agree with you, but I would modify that and say, change it to respond, don't react. Right.
Right.
And the difference between responding and reacting is responding means you've had a chance to think about it and you have a chance to say to yourself, what do I want out of this at the end of the day? I want a job. I want to, you know, have a good life. I want to be able to work with people and I want to be able to run a team and be a leader. So let me approach it this way rather than what would be the reaction. And if you react, reacting is based off of emotion. It's based off of your natural tendency to do something. And the problem is that if you react, you're predictable. Or if you react, you might convey an image that you don't necessarily want to convey.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And do you remember the movie Office Space? Did you see that one?
Yes, one of my favorites.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got this guy and his name's Michael Bolton, right? And then someone says, why don't you change your name? And he's like, why should I change? He's the one who sucks, right? Well, that's kind of a lot of people's mentality whenever they get out of the military. Why should I change? They're the ones that suck.
Just for the younger crowd out there, because I know all of us here, old dogs, know who Michael Bolton is. Explain who Michael Bolton was, because he's,
you know what?
Such a giant in the music industry.
Jeff, I'm going down some of your albums you got right there. I can see it. Michael.
I'm not a big fan of his particular body of work, so I'm not familiar with Michael Bolton's music. I do know that he was a big musician, but I don't really know his stuff.
But hey, you know what Michael Bolton did in Office Space when he went into the interview with the two Bobs? I love Michael Bolton.
Best artist of all time.
So, yeah, exactly. And just for those of you who don't know, Michael Bolton is like the epitome of soft core, like really, 50-year-old women loved him at the time.
Department store music.
And he had this deep voice and he had this crazy like 90s/80s hair. And the guy in the movie, his name was Michael Bolton too. And so everybody, when he said his name was Michael Bolton, they would immediately go to the singer. There was these two consultants who were there to hire or fire people. And what was the famous line? It's, oh, your name's Michael Bolton. Do you love his music? I absolutely love his music. It doesn't get better for me than when he sings When a Man Loves a Woman.
But do people really not know who Michael Bolton is?
I don't know. Just a backstory on this, and then we'll get back to it because we got to get the show over with in a little bit. But I'm from Connecticut originally, and I'm from Fairfield County, Connecticut. And Fairfield County, Connecticut is a funny place because you have the poorest of the poor and the absolute richest of the rich people. And so I grew up in a town called Norwalk, and Michael Bolton's house was on the border of Norwalk and Westport. And my Aunt Catherine, who's a little bit crazy, but she's an awesome old Italian woman, she absolutely loved Michael Bolton. And she made an absolutely awesome pasta fagioli. And every week for about 3 or 4 months, she would make a pot of pasta fagioli. She'd put it in a container. She'd go up to the front gate of Michael Bolton's house. She'd wave in the camera and she'd say, hey, Michael, I brought your pasta fagioli to you. And she'd leave it at the doorstep. But that's the power that Michael Bolton had over older women.
Over older women.
I get tased every time I go to Megan Fox's house. My famous dish.
Well, I had a whole point to that. There was like a whole thing. But no, I was just what I was getting at was that you can't change the way people think. That's everything in life is that you can't change the way other people think. And if someone perceives you as a tough old battle axe because you were in the military, and if someone looks at you and they immediately say, "Oh, that guy's a veteran," well, then you're carrying yourself in a way that meets those stereotypes. So look at how you're handling yourself. Now, personally, there are elements of being a veteran that are extremely, I think, noble. Or there are things that you want to be proud of. And there are good stereotypes, such as punctuality or you know, being able to lead or being able to follow or being a good decision maker, those are all positive stereotypes for the military. They're also negative stereotypes. So you have to look at yourself and say, which stereotypes am I enforcing with my behavior? Am I doing things that lead people to believe that I might possibly snap? Is it the way that I'm talking or the way that I deliver information? Do I come across as a bully? You know, this guy, that Marine that was in the fire academy with me, he ended up getting terminated because he got into a drunken altercation with another guy. And he got terminated while we were in the academy. And they were so scared of him that they said he lives somewhere in the vicinity of where we're currently holding this academy. And I know that he has guns, so be careful. Look out. If you see him, let somebody know.
Oh, my God.
And I'm standing here like, this is a, I mean, he's my friend. You know, like, we were all friends with this guy. You know, what are you talking about? And so he carried himself in a way that affected the way people perceive him.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't change the way people perceive you. You can only change the messages you're sending out. That's my whole, I think that should be anyone's takeaway from anything. And whatever you listen to AlphaCast, whenever you listen to your show, I want people to think about how can I improve myself so that I am a better communicator, I'm a better leader, I'm a better entrepreneur, I'm a better employee.
Right. And that's something I want to emphasize about that. That was not that Marine's fault at all, right? It was
right.
It was their perception that led to that, but it was his responsibility. And what's the difference there? By fault means that you've actually done something, right? You've actually done something intentionally to create that kind of image. Responsibility plays into the way you carry yourself. And the things that you don't do actively that give people a certain perception of you. And it's your responsibility to see to your own self-image, right? And so that doesn't mean that Marine was a bad person.
Absolutely.
That doesn't mean that he was a shitty, crazy person or that he was, you know, actively trying to alienate anybody. What it means was that it was his responsibility to learn about the job, to learn about the people around him, to learn about the world around him. And so that's the difference there. And so if anybody's going through this, I don't want them to think that, you know, we're blaming veterans for any of this, but we're not saying that it's your fault. What we're saying is that it's your responsibility, and there is a better way of doing things. There's a much better way of doing things because we want you to be successful. We want you to have a great life.
You have to have ownership over your life. You have to have ownership over the messages you're sending out. You have to have ownership over your image. Just like people that would, you know, Randy spends like 6 hours a day doing his hair, putting on his shirts, changing his outfits. So, but you have to have accountability for yourself over everything else. And there was one particular moment, and I'll probably remember this for the rest of my life. It was just before this guy got terminated. And he and I sat down at the table. He had been quiet all day. He hadn't been talking to anybody. He was clearly upset. And I sat down and I started talking with him. And I was like, man, what's going on? And he started telling me that all of the guys, because we were from different district offices throughout the state. And his office was pretty tight-knit at the very beginning of the academy. They were all really close. There was about 8 or 9 guys just from his office. And they all got along really well. And I was sitting there talking with him. And he said, you know, these guys have been talking to HR about me. My guys have been talking to HR about me, and they've never brought any of this to me. They've never said, hey, we have an issue with the way that you talk to us, or we have an issue with the way that you do this or that. And he was legitimately hurt. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to come across as sensitive or vulnerable or anything like that, but he couldn't help it. He was genuinely affected because there were people that he really cared about, that he wanted to see succeed, and that he wanted to see work hard and increase their physical fitness and learn their job. He wanted that for them. But just in the way that he was delivering his tone of the messages he was sending out, they didn't trust him, or they didn't feel like that he was had their best interest at heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that hurt him to the core. Absolutely. And so in my mind, I'm sitting here and I'm listening to him, and I said, listen, man, you have got to learn how to communicate with your team. You have got to learn, because you're not broken. You're not dysfunctional. You have different life experience. And that's true no matter where you come from. Let's take the military completely out of the equation. And let's say that I grew up inside of a house that was dilapidated and falling apart. I'm talking about me personally. I didn't have air conditioning until I was 19 years old. Okay, there were holes in the floor in the kitchen that you could see down to the dirt. That's how poor I was. Now, I'm from Southeast Texas, and I could talk to everybody just like this if I wanted to. I could talk about trucks. Ford is better than Chevy all day long. I could do that. But I've had to learn that you have to deliver the message that you want to send in order to get the results that you want. I'm responsible for that, nobody else.
Absolutely. And if I showed up in your East Texas town with, you know, my pointed leather shoes and ripped jeans and my gold chain and my button-down shirt unbuttoned all the way down to my chest, people would probably look at me in a funky way, right? And that's the thing. It's you have to understand what situation you're going to. You have to have that situational awareness. You have to school yourself a little bit on the people. You have to school yourself a little bit on the people you're working around. You have to know your people. You have to know your fellow students. You have to know your coworkers. You have to know your family members, right?
Yep.
If you want to manage that. You know?
Absolutely.
And something else from the beginning of the podcast, you know, the Marine who said he was scanning the parking lot and he was hypervigilant. And this is something that I want to bring up for the end. The thing is, if you're hypervigilant right now and you've gone through an experience like combat, it changes you. You're never going to be the same person you were before you went, ever. But it's not the fact that you're hypervigilant. It's the way you're visualizing it, the way you're understanding it. You're understanding it as a problem. You're understanding it as something that's a handicap. You're understanding it as something that's plaguing you. The fact of the matter is, what has happened to you is an increase of senses. You are in touch with certain parts of your brain that 99% of people who exist in this world today aren't in touch with. But at one point in our evolutionary history, a lot of people acted like that. A lot of people, you know, they would see something, they'd be constantly scanning. Because we as human beings at one time were food for a lot of other animals here on this planet. And
exactly.
We developed that instinct. So the way to approach this, the way to approach something like that, if you're having nightmares, if you're having hypervigilance, understand one thing: you're not crazy, you're not insane. And the thing is, no amount of telling yourself you have PTSD or telling yourself that you're sick is going to get rid of that. What has to happen is you have to give yourself time. Over time, you're going to start to calm down, but it's going to take a long time. And in the meantime, when it happens, don't break down to yourself and say, you know what, I screwed up. You know, the day I live in right near San Bernardino, California, and the day that they had those terrorist attacks there, you know what I was doing? I was sitting on my floor here with a rifle in my lap, with the lights off, looking out the window. Because I also heard that the terrorists lived down the street from me. Part of me was like, well, why did I do that? Why did I do something like that? How insane was that? But then the other part of me was like, no, that was the most rational thing I could do at the time. That was me defending my home, defending my family. And if a man can't do that, then what's up? You know what I mean? What's wrong with this world? So never feel like you are insane because of anything like that.
Yeah,
That's just a Tuesday for me.
That's a Tuesday for you where you are in the world?
I missed something there. I don't know.
I did too.
Yeah.
No, well, what I was going to say is I say it so often that I can't speak on PTSD. I can't speak on trauma. I can't speak on any of those. Obviously, I didn't experience it. But what I can say is that we know what PTSD is as a culture. I think we've gotten to that place where it's extremely well researched, and it's getting more research every single day. There are absolutely treatment plans out there. And if someone's going through treatment for a specific type of stress, then they've already taken the right steps. But it's not I just go to treatment once a week or once a month and then I'm okay. Anytime you have any type of psychological issue, or anytime you have a bad habit even that you want to break, you have to change how you look at the world. And it's a constant and concerted effort. And so speaking specifically of the situational awareness of scanning the parking lot, there are a lot of people that don't have that skill, that don't have that experience, that don't have that instinct. Mm-hmm. And there are people that have an interest in developing that. So they force, I force myself to try and be more situationally aware. I look around everywhere I go and I try and, you know, pick out the exits as an exercise in just trying to be aware of my surroundings. It's not that I'm worried necessarily that someone's going to kick in the door and kill me, but I feel like I have a responsibility for my own physical safety, the safety of my children, to know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And, I think it's interesting that as you work and I try and develop that skill set by exercising it every single day, if you have something in your life that's creating stress, in my mind, then you need to be changing the way that you look at it and working at it every single day to turn a potentially bad habit, or what you perceive as a bad habit, into something that you perceive as a good habit.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, guys, we're just about out of time. I want to give you both the opportunity to tell everybody where you're at, how to reach you on social media. So, guys, give me your individual Twitter handles, your individual Instagram handles, Facebook. I'll put those in the show notes as well. And I want each of you to give me a little bit of a closing comment of what you want people to remember you by here on this podcast, and put a note in there about AlphaCast.
Okay. Well, I'll go ahead and start. We do this pretty well. Randy, I have some practice. So you can go ahead and find us on SoundCloud at AlphaCast Media. And then I ask anyone that listens to the show, if you enjoy it, please leave some feedback, like, comment, or subscribe. So that way we can understand what our audience is looking for. And at the same time, we're trying to grow our audience, so share that. Randy?
Same thing. We want to help people. We're not doing this for ourselves. It's not about a business or making money. I'm seeing too much negativity, and I want to bring some positive light to veterans for themselves and for the way society views us.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then our social media, everything is at AlphaCast Media. So we're next. Yes. Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We only have one account. Randy and I don't use separate accounts. So at AlphaCast Media.
We share everything.
Well, everybody out there listening, I want to thank you for listening in on this conversation. It has been absolutely awesome. Be sure to check out AlphaCast. I was a guest on their show. I think they're going to release that episode pretty soon.
Yeah, we ran into some snags. I think either this week or maybe early next week, we're going to release Pete Bell from Inkfidel.
Cool.
Sat down with us, and then you're going to be the week after that. So if not next week, then the week after.
Awesome. Awesome. And these guys have some great guests, and I'm looking forward to seeing their podcast grow. And for everybody out there, regardless of where you are, what you're doing, always know that there's an opportunity for you to grow. There's an opportunity for you to learn. And if you feel like you're stuck, one of the best ways to move forward is to think about how you can help other people, much like these two are doing. Think about ways that you can offer value to this world. Think about things that you've experienced that other people might like to know. And through that, you might find something that you're both passionate about and that you're good at. So until next week, I will talk to you guys all soon. I love you all. Peace.